Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to Freaky Fridays, part of the Podmoth Network, the podcast where we talk about all kinds of scary, spooky, freaky shit while drinking wine and laughing through our fears. Mm-hmm. We're your hosts.
I'm Melissa.
And I'm Michelle.
And tonight, I wouldn't necessarily say this is scary or spooky, but it's definitely deranged. Mm-hmm. It is the cult, which they called themselves Buddha Field. They started out in Hollywood, California, and moved on to Hawaii. So we start out in one state and move to another.
I think any cult is scary, creepy, and freaky.
It's just not scary in the traditional sense of scary. You know what I mean? And really quickly, I do want to let everybody know that if I sound weird or if I'm pausing a long time, I yet again have trouble with my root canal tooth. And I'm in some pain. So it's a little weird to talk and eat and drink. So I apologize if I sound like I'm talking like I have a stick up my ass.
Feel free to take your time. I will cut out superfluous pauses.
Okay. I will try. I mean,
the magic of editing.
Yeah. There's a lot of detail when it comes to this cult. There is a documentary on it. But the way that I found out about it is I've mentioned this before, Brian and I were visiting my cousin that was stationed in Hawaii. And at the time when he was living there, he was living just a few houses down from the Buddha Field house when they moved to Hawaii. Now, from what I understand, they have since, so at the time when he was living there, I don't think they were still living there. The Buddha Field cult has since moved on to a more protective home in Hawaii. I'm not sure where they're at. It just says that they're a little bit more secure where they're at. So that's how I found out about it. So Brian and I watched the documentary on it, and I highly recommend watching it because even though I'm going to talk about it, well, I tend to jump all over the place when I talk, but also there's just so much detail, but I really recommend watching the documentary. You can watch it for free on Amazon Prime.
And you can't beat the visuals.
No. And the name of the document is called Holy Hell. Mm-hmm. So the way this whole sort of journey for them started out was back in 1985, there was a young kid named Will Allen. And he is not only or was a member of this cult, but he is the one who directed the Holy Hell documentary. It was his way of telling his story.
That's right. I'm so glad you're telling me this because I think you told me about this back in the day. Mm-hmm. We watched the documentary, but then we were watching like millions of documentaries about all kinds of, because I think that was around COVID time that we watched it.
Okay.
So I kind of forgot about this. Yeah. And when you brought it up again, I was like, woo! Yeah. So I can't. Yes.
I actually rewatched it and.
Oh, did you?
I did. And I, even though I'd seen it before, I still found it interesting. And I think it's important to watch it because me telling the story does not do the justice of all of these poor people as far as like really seeing and feeling their emotions and kind of like really getting a feel for the crazy that went into this cult.
Yeah.
You know, of course they didn't refer to themselves as a cult back then. Most people don't when they're in the thick of it. So back in 1985, Will Allen, this young man, he had just graduated, I believe, from college. He was living with his mom. And when he graduated, he had told his mom that he was gay, came out. She was not happy about that, so she kicked him out.
Oh, jeez.
So he sort of found himself needing to find something, I think, to believe in again. Right. And he needed to sort of find himself and figure out what to do and who he was. And that's when he came across a yoga teacher who was going by the name of Michelle, 1L, 1E. So like sort of the French spelling.
Yeah. Great. Not related.
No. Michelle was born Jaime Gomez. He's gone by other names such as Michelle, the teacher, and we'll kind of get into that more. But Michelle, or the teacher as we'll call him, he was a so to speak, actor. He claims to have been part of the Oakland Ballet.
But there's no proof of that?
Well, to date, his biggest film feature he did was a very small part in Rosemary's Baby. And he is the very creepy man at the very end of that movie who just stares into the camera and doesn't say anything. And the camera sort of pans away from him.
Right.
That was his big role.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen the full movie of Rosemary's Baby.
He literally is at the very end, does not speak. He's just... So here's how I would describe this teacher look-wise. He looks like a beachy Hollywood Norman Bates. He's got that olive complexion like Norman Bates, that dark hair, those dark kind of beady eyes. He looks like Norman Bates, but he's kind of got like frosted tips, like blonde frosted tips. And he's muscular because he does... care about his body. He works out. He does yoga and all that. But he fucking looks like Norman Bates. So
he
it's
does.
Like double,
yeah, he does.
Double creepy on the creepometer.
Those creepy eyes. Yeah.
And a lot in the documentary, you see him just staring at the camera and it's very creepy and it just gives off very Norman Bates vibes.
He's like, I did it in Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
what I'm going to do
That's
to all
That's pretty much
cameras.
What he's doing in there. So Will meets this teacher, Michelle, and he, like all the other followers, I think, again, these are people who are lost. They've been kicked out of homes. They're just looking to believe in something, a higher power. Mm-hmm. So this teacher basically tells these people that he himself had a master that led him to a spiritual awakening. Mm-hmm. And he now wanted to be that teacher for them. So these people, because I think some of them are so wounded.
Oh, yeah.
Are just so easily sucked into that because they right. instantly become this family.
And they're all supporting each other. They're all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so, some of them.
And who wouldn't want that? Especially right. when you're wounded or hurt by family or
yeah.
you're vulnerable.
And this teacher is described as someone who is childlike and playful and fun, and he likes to sing and dance. And so he makes them feel loved and wanted, mm-hmm. and they just feel happy, right? And so a lot of them live together. So they're together 24 hours a day at this point.
Good God.
Most of them still have jobs. So they all work. They all pitch in to pay for, obviously, their rent, for food, expenses. Michelle, the teacher, gets them into things like volunteering. So now they feel like they're a part of something bigger, right?
Right.
They're making
good.
A difference.
Yeah.
They're doing good. But these people are the ones who are paying for everything.
Right.
So they're working their full-time jobs. And at the same time, a lot of them are volunteering like also 40 hours a week.
Jesus.
But they're the ones spending their money on things that need to be fixed.
Where they live. So they're all of their income is going towards the Buddhafield cult.
To the teacher.
Right.
And to things that they're donating their time to. They spend a lot of money on things like that as well. Mm. Their money was also used to fund the, as he, now he goes by the master. He's no longer the teacher, but now he's the master.
Gotcha.
A lot of their money went to fund the master's travels.
Oh.
So when he would travel, you know, to find more spiritual whatever and this, all this kind of stuff,
whatever
they
he
were
said,
funding
he would...
his travels. Whatever he said, they would. So
oh, man.
When he gets these people sort of belonging and feeling like they're needed and wanted and loved, the cult part comes in where he starts telling them, and for different reasons and at different times, that basically without him, they would die. That's
awful.
Yeah. So the first time they go on this retreat, they call it the Shakti or Shakti retreat. Mm-hmm. And whenever they do these retreats, they're always in these excluded areas. They go up to the mountains and, you know, forests and things like that.
Right.
And it's the wilderness and whatever.
Away from normal people that would tell them you're in a cult.
Yeah. Yeah. Always by lots of like bodies of water. They do a lot of like stuff inside the water, which is, it's strange. But so now that they're members, they are considered to be his disciples. So when they go on this first retreat, the Shakti retreat is basically the way he explains it is that it's the transference of energy from him, the master, to the disciple.
Uh-oh.
So you'll see in this documentary, he's doing all kinds of strange things, okay? It's very, the way they do these retreats, when you first watch it, it looks like it looks very orgy-esque.
Uh-huh.
Like they look like they're having these weird giant orgies. Like they're not actually having sex on film, but there's lots of like frolicking in the water and touching each other, like very sensual, and like they're rubbing each other, and they're, it's like peace and love. Right. Like it's very hippie.
What year is this odd. Again?
It's 1985.
80s.
1985.
Cocaine?
Yeah. I mean, well, no, because part of joining this is that you're not supposed to, people stopped drinking, doing drugs. You're not allowed to have sex.
Whoa.
You're not supposed to be watching TV, reading, listening to the radio, because all of that is considered to be, especially the sex part, is considered to be draining the energy in a negative way.
Just take a week off of social media. You'll be fine.
You'll see people, and he's always in a Speedo. Right. He is in a Speedo, like 90% of this documentary, he is in a Speedo. So you'll see him at these retreats, and people are literally kneeling or bowing down to him, and he's standing above them, and he'll do things like where he takes both his hands and sort of runs them parallel along the sides of their faces and kind of over their body and chest, and people will start like having these weird like convulsion things and like shaking and crying, yeah.
They're feeling the spirit.
And
yeah.
So a lot of people have said that at this Shakti retreat, they felt so blissed out and high, like sort of in an LSD state, but without doing drugs.
That is wild to me, though, because I know it's possible. I know that you can have like a healing experience and feel something, but to go as far as saying that you're feeling like you were on an LSD trip, that to me is wild. Not like I felt calm, right. And
relaxed
and more open, yeah. And relaxed, like saying that you were tripping out and elated and high, like, to me, that is random.
Well, it is, especially because we both know he wasn't really doing anything to them.
Right.
I mean, at least I don't think he was. I mean, and I need to preface with, it's not that I don't believe in that kind of thing, because I absolutely 100% believe
in talked about that.
Energy healing. And I've done energy healing for myself through other people. So I believe in that. I just don't believe in this fucking weirdo.
Right. And I think that's where... That's what it reminded me of when you say that. When you had your energy healing, did you feel like LSD tripped out and started shaking? And like, that's when it makes me think like, is everybody an actor? This started in LA. Are all these people actors?
Right. Yeah. So because of, and I'll talk about how I felt in a second, but with their LSD state, they're saying like they saw like all these vivid colors and patterns swirling and they could hear things. And it just seemed strange. Now, for me personally, when I did some energy healing work and I've done aura readings and things, I have felt a sense of being more light in my body, like more calm and more light. I just didn't have such a weight on me. And I know that this, some people listening are saying, but I did have that experience with the third eye that we've talked about for a long time. It was very trippy. It didn't last long, but it did happen. But I didn't convulse. These people said they could feel like electric, like currents in their body. I felt very emotional. I did cry after, but I didn't.
Well, it's like a release.
Yes. I didn't have an LSD trip.
Yeah.
Not at all. So again, during this retreat, you'll see them like playing in the water. You know, he's kind of, he'll have moments where he is childlike and he's goofy and dancing around. But they look like, these people look like they're enjoying themselves, right? They look like for once they're sort of free from who they are. There's no one judging them. They have people, they call them their brothers and sisters. Like they care about each other. They're there for each other. So it looks really nice. I mean, especially for someone who, and back in the 80s, who lots of them, not lots, but quite a few of them were gay. To be able to be themselves coming out and not being shunned was huge for them. So I can see where in a cult like this, where people would be so easily sucked in.
Right. And I think from the other cult documentaries and things that this is how they do it. This is how they prey on vulnerable people. They bring you in. They love bomb you. They make you feel like you're just in an amazing place. And why would you ever want to leave? And then it's slowly downhill to you can't see your family. You can't do this. You can't watch TV. You can't drink Coke. You can't do this. And that's when it starts getting very controlling. And that's when it's like people don't realize, though, at that point, they're too brainwashed.
Sure. And at this point, a lot of these people are saying they just felt so accepted and so loved by their master and by their brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. They just sort of had a place to belong, right? So right. I get that. So then they move on to a retreat, which they call the Knowing Retreat. Mm-mm. So at this point, there's like over 100 members in this group. Okay.
And they all live in the same house or something?
Well, a lot of them lived like in an apartment together or like next door to each other. Mm. When they move on to their next spot, because in between California and Hawaii, they actually go to Austin, Texas for quite some time.
Oh, okay.
When they move to Austin, which we'll get to, is where they live sort of in a compound together.
Gotcha.
But right okay. now, the master lives in one, and then they live in like, you know, because there's so many of them, they live in a however many to an apartment. They all kind of live together, but in their own setting.
Gotcha.
But when they go on these retreats, they're like camping or whatever, because they're out, right. you know. So with the Knowing Retreat, this is when the disciples can ask the master to have a direct experience with God.
Oh.
He picks a couple of people, so not everyone gets to be chosen. Mm. And these people, I mean, they pray to be picked. They do whatever they can to be picked, because he claims that when you can have this direct experience with God, that you're able to see him, taste him, and hear him.
Taste him?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. They didn't elaborate. I'm guessing they didn't mean in a gross sexual way, but that's how they explained it.
Did they say what God tasted like?
No.
Okay.
So at this Knowing Retreat, once he picks the people, they have this like ceremony that will last several days. And he tells them before they're chosen that they would have to be willing to give up everything.
Like mind, body, soul, yeah, everything.
Everything. And if they didn't, he would know. Ooh. Okay. So there are some
That's
people.
The knowing?
Well, he would know, meaning the master would know, and he wouldn't choose them.
Oh, okay.
So this okay. is where he's starting the mind games
Getting
of like
in their heads, yeah,
not Even having more. Sex, not watching TV, not doing all the things that people do on a normal basis, mm-hmm. and saying like, you have to be 100% pure and give yourself up for this, and you will be chosen if you are worthy right. and if you are ready.
I wonder where he got all these ideas. I mean, I've seen... This sounds familiar in other cults, but it seems like they were very segregated. So I wouldn't think that this guy would know what like the Scientologists were doing or the Warren Jeffs family was doing. But it kind of like they have like a whole itinerary or rule book for yeah. how to become this cult leader. But how do they know how to fuck with people's head like this? It's so crazy.
I think because like you said earlier, they prey on people who are insecure and lonely, and they
I just
know,
want to give those people a hug. I don't want to right? bring them into a house and make them give me all their money and take them on weird retreats and
but that's
touch them.
How they're just like master manipulators. That's what they do.
I know. That's
how
and
they
that's
get by.
What blows my mm-hmm. mind. Yeah. That's so insane to me.
So at this point, Will has now got a sister who is an actual biological sister who is in this with him. Mm. And I mean, she has given everything. She wants to be chosen for the knowing experience like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm. She's all in.
And once again, she is not chosen. And he tells her, you're just not mm-hmm. ready for this. I don't believe you're ready for this. You have more work to do. So meanwhile, she is like acting pretty much like a slave to this master Great. To get to this, right? So during this mm-hmm. ceremony, he sits in this chair, and the way he sits there and people are kneeling in front of him, he sits there and there's like, you know, can't whatever set up, and the way he sits there and looks at them, you can tell in his mind that he is feeling like he is an almighty powerful king or God or whatever he wants to be in that moment, because he is looking down on them. And these people walk away from their ceremony with him in absolute tears, not in a bad
sad
way,
tears?
Not sad tears, tears, but like they're happy and they're just feeling so like euphoric. And it's just, it's strange.
That is so wild. The brain is amazing.
Oh, yeah. I think in their minds, they have really just experienced this one-on-one with God.
Right.
So they've walked away. They're so elated that they're like literally weeping.
Right.
It's very odd.
To us, yes.
Yes, to us, yes. So here they are doing these different retreats. They're now also expected to do weekly therapy sessions with the teacher.
Oh no.
Which they have
to
pay for.
Is this after they're chosen?
No, what? All of them. Anyone in the anyone who's part of the member has to do weekly therapy sessions with them, and they have to pay $50 a week. They have to pay for their sessions. Okay.
Unbelievable.
So there's just one night where the teacher pulls Will when they're on that knowing retreat. He pulls Will, the young gay kid, aside, mm-hmm. and he talks to him alone, and he tells him that after having a fight all night with God,
okay.
that he found out that Will was going to die in a terrible accident. But
oh God. Who tells somebody that?
As long as Will followed the master or teacher's guidance, he would live.
Wow.
Will was told it was an honor to serve him. Will should have thought of this as an honor to serve the master.
Right.
And he sort of became the master's, well, I'd like to call him a slave, but he is now the master's like one-on-one, like pet boy, right? So he, when he's told it's an honor to serve the master, he's now having to give him massages and adjust him.
Wow.
He had to move into an apartment right next door. Oh, they're called body workers. So the people who are honored enough to be the ones to serve his body are called body workers.
Right.
He has to move into the apartment next door to be closer. And he even had to turn his living room and his apartment into a dance studio for the master because he wants to be able to continue his ballet.
Oh, wow. This guy.
They are then forced to do daily ballet lessons with the master.
Everybody?
Yes, everybody. And if it meant that they had to leave work early, oh, sometimes wow. people couldn't go into work at all because they had to be at his beck and call and they had to follow this structure. So the weekly therapy at this point is $50. Now we're doing daily ballet training.
Do you have to pay for that too?
They didn't say, but I don't think so.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. They were all given new names. They couldn't go by their names anymore. They were given new names that they had to go by.
This is so familiar.
Then they were told they had to detach from their families.
Oh, here we go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Call your dad. You're in a cult.
Yeah. So they're told they have to detach from families, weekly therapy, daily ballet. They have to serve him, pay for everything. Again, cannot watch or own a TV, cannot listen to the radio, magazines.
Yeah, that would bring you back to real world.
Mm-hmm.
That would unfuck your brain.
Mm-hmm. And they interviewed Will and his, because now at this, Will's got two of his sisters. So all three of these kids are in. Yeah. So they interview the family. The
parents
mom.
Are like, what is going on?
So at first, when the kids tell them that they have new names, that these are their new given names, the mom's like, no, I don't think so.
Good for her.
We gave you your names at birth and that is what I will call you.
Right.
So now they're being told that they have to be detached from their family. One woman was told she was not allowed to go see her dying father. He was literally dying and she wasn't allowed to go see him.
So Scientology.
You are not, and I may say this again later, so I apologize, but you're not allowed to have babies.
Wow.
If you became pregnant, which the one woman who lost her dad and couldn't go see him, she got pregnant and was forced to have an abortion.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. So no kids. No kids at all.
Well, couldn't she have kept the kid and just got kicked out of, like, why would you force her to have an abortion if she didn't want to do that?
Because she felt that the master, that honoring the master and being part of him was much more greater than having the baby.
So she was so brainwashed that she
yes.
wanted to stay in the cult that bad. That's yeah. awful.
Yeah. He's even started to, at this point, if he's kind of noticed that certain members kind of look like they might be taking a liking to each other.
Uh-oh.
He has gone to them privately and said, you know, like, you can't have a relationship with so-and-so. You cannot sleep with so-and-so. And then it kind of comes full circle and you learn why he's telling them these things. Mm-hmm. So now we've kind of pushed forward into 1991 because it goes ahead several years. And they talk about this man who was outside of the group. He was not a disciple. He was not part of the cult. He fell in love with a female member in the group. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how they met. They don't really talk about it, but they met, however, and...
Right, because she was still working to pay for this shit.
Probably. And she looked like a model. She was super pretty. So I don't know if she, you know, did modeling. I'm not sure, but they met. They started dating. He was in love with her. He realized what was going on with what she was in, even though these people didn't realize they were in cults.
Right. That takes an outsider, yeah.
Oh, for sure. So he was trying to sort of tear down the group because he wanted to be with her and he couldn't because of this. And he saw what was happening to her being brainwashed.
Right.
So he reached out to a group called the Cult Awareness Network. Mm. And this group was run by the gentleman named Rick Ross.
Rick Ross? The rapper?
No. Mm-mm. He, I think, started this group after it was one of, not Waco, because that hadn't happened yet. After one of the cult, some cult thing that happened, he sort of started this group. So what people could do with this Cult Awareness Network was parents or whomever, loved ones, they started paying this group. And what happens is this group would go in and kidnap their child from the cult they were in. And they would reprogram their brains. They would get them out of that cult and reprogram them. So parents are paying for this. So when this guy went to this Cult Awareness Network and said, my girlfriend's in it, whatever, word kind of got out. And so parents were now paying this group to go in to the Buddhafield cult and get their kids and reprogram them. So now at this point, when this is happening, Michelle, the master or teacher, he was starting to get worried that they were going to get labeled as a cult. Yeah. So all of a sudden,
no shit,
everything about God and love sort of went away. And he was more consumed and worried about what to do, asking the members, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Right. So like all his teachings and belongings kind of came to a halt. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess, you know, God could take a break for a moment.
Right. That's not the important thing now.
No, because he,
our image,
he knows
our...
they're going to be found and he needs to figure it out. So in the middle of the night, the master, Michelle, grabs Will, his chef.
Of course.
And one other person, I can't remember, they weren't really clear on who the other person was that they said. And he tells them that we need to leave, you need to hurry up and get your things together. We're leaving. And so this, they leave like in the dead of night. No other members were allowed to go.
Wow.
They all had to stay behind in Hollywood and they had to wait for instructions. So this went on for 6 months.
Jesus.
6 months that he and Will, the chef and whomever else, were sort of on the run looking for a new place that they could go set up.
Good Lord.
So in the meantime, all these members who are so dependent on this group are falling apart.
I bet.
Are upset. They're crying. They want to be with their brothers and sisters. They want to be with their leader.
They just
don't know how to function without him. They're just so lost. And then they say that in this transition time in these 6 months that Michelle, the master, that his behavior starts to become very obsessive.
Mm.
They notice changes in him.
Fallen from grace.
Mm-hmm. So then they land in Austin, Texas. One of the disciples buys a house for the master.
Oh, wow.
Buys a house.
Oh, wow.
He has now changed his name to Andreas. He is no longer Master Michelle. He's now Andreas. And
that's called witness protection program.
Right. He slowly had members of the group start to come out to Austin. And the disciples had to come in small groups. They couldn't all come at once. He didn't want to cause too much attraction to them.
Oh, okay.
I don't think anyone was really paying too much attention to them at this point, except for the people that were within the group's parents. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, he's kind of blowing it out of proportion.
Yeah. He's making it bigger than it is right now.
To create that fear and reliance on him.
Uh-huh. So small groups at a time start leaving their jobs behind, their homes, their loved ones.
Oh my God.
They move to Austin, Texas. And he's now having members start recruit new people in the group. And the way they're going about it is through yoga, kind of like before.
Okay.
He is doing yoga and they're doing yoga and they're making everyone think that it's just wonderful yoga group. And it's all about yoga. And
did they say why he wanted to grow this group? Like, was there, he needed that like new blood in there to believe in?
I think so. But he still had all his members with him.
Right.
But he wanted more because the more members, the more money.
Right. And also ego. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So now we're 2 years later. It's 1993 and Waco happened. Okay.
Right. Oh.
Okay. And when that literally blew up and went up in flames. Yeah. It really freaked Andreas, which he goes by now. He started trying to prepare his disciples by giving them acting classes every day. And they would do these.
Would just stare at cameras? all he knew how to do.
They would do these practices on how to act if they are ever approached by an FBI member.
Oh, good Lord.
So he's training them on how to lie, right?
So the Waco thing actually helped him, like, get deeper into their brains.
Yeah, because at this point he knows, okay, they are now going to know that we're a cult and onto us because there's already this network of people you can pay to come get your kids. Waco happened. People within the group, or that woman within the group, was dating someone who was like, he knows that they're going to be onto them if they're not already.
Right.
So he's training these
people. Did it
say
what happened to that girl in the group with the model chick with the, oh, okay.
They don't elaborate on
it. But just that kind of like lit the fuse on he needs to get out of LA and he needs to bring everybody to a compound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So he's teaching them every day on basically how to act, which really is lying, basically, if they're ever captured by FBI.
It's just lying.
And he's teaching them things like as simple as like, if you're approached or, you know, if they talk to you, you don't know me. You don't know an Andreas. You don't know a Jaime Gomez. You don't know a Michelle. You don't know me at all. He's forcing them.
They didn't find that odd.
Right? Like, hello. Oh, there's no red flag there for you.
Yeah.
People who still are involved and do talk to their family, even though they're supposed to detach from them, he's making them lie to their families and their loved ones on things like where they're living now.
Right.
Right. So he's going as far as having people send fake postcards. So he's having one of the disciples will fly to Europe and send postcards out to these families, making it look like they're in Europe or other states.
That is commitment.
And the one mom says that when she gets these postcards, she's like, I knew he wasn't really there. I could tell by the way the postcard was written you know, things like that.
I love parents like that.
Will actually visits his family, and the whole time he's living like one or two towns over from them, but they think he's in some other state, and they know. Awful. Like they just know. Yeah. They can tell. So at this point, they're lying to families, and families are starting to get concerned, and it just gets stranger. Like he just starts to get more obsessive. They cut to a few years later. It's 1997 at this point, and they're still in Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. But he decides he wants an outdoor dance theater. He wants a dance theater built. So he made another disciple buy him a piece of land, and all of the other disciples have to build a theater.
Oh, Jesus.
Which means they're paying for the materials. They're working their full-time jobs and still building a theater for him.
And doing therapy and taking ballet courses?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking, that's a busy day.
But they're paying, doesn't pay for anything. They are paying for everything. Right. They pay for all the food. They pay for everything that they do.
I mean, this guy is straight out of the Warren Jeffs Latter-day Saints and Scientology handbook. Mm-hmm. Like, he is following it to a T. Right. This is wild. Okay.
So.
Okay, continue.
So, in the beginning, they're building this theater for him, and he would come out and look at it and say, no, I don't like it like that anymore. Tear it down and start over. I want it like this now.
Fuck you. But
they did it. They would take it down, and they would rebuild it until he was happy with it.
Wow. Dick.
People were having to leave work early to help build this, so they're training daily. They're doing all these other things, and now they're having to leave their jobs early to come back home to build this theater.
Unbelievable.
They get it built, and it's got this elaborate stage and costumes, and then they all have to, you know, they've been working on their ballet. They have to practice and practice and practice, and then they put on these big, elaborate ballet shows for themselves. There's nobody coming to watch them.
Or paying for a ticket.
You know, they're having these fabrics flown in and bought so they can make these costumes and these sets. And it's...
Oh, wow.
He's just kind of gone bonkers, right? So...
That's unreal.
Yeah. At this point, they're like really deep into like chauffeuring him around everywhere, cooking and cleaning for him. Like, he doesn't do anything. He's treated like a king.
Ew.
Yeah. When they go on retreats or they go in public or whatever, one of the guys is in charge of like carrying this big ass chair for him everywhere and setting it up for him. And like,
wow.
When he takes a shower, someone squeezes the shampoo out for him. I mean, he is treated like a god, right?
That's worse than coming to America. I just, that blows my mind because I can't imagine, you know, rubbing somebody's feet or squeezing a shampoo bottle and being like, that's because he's my master and I'm so happy to do it. I'd be like, fuck that. You got two hands.
I get it.
And me, I'll deprogram.
He's starting to get, and I don't know if he's starting to, but there just is when they're starting to talk about how he's kind of obsessed with image on people. So they're like forced to go to the gym, keep their bodies in shape. The men are forced to like wax like their chest and all that kind of stuff. And then he started telling people that they needed plastic surgery.
Oh, goodness. So not only are you having to do whatever he says, like give all your money, give all your time, but now you have to look perfect.
Yeah. And again, people are following him and believing it and doing what he says because he tells them this is for their greater good. This is what will keep them alive. And
but when do you start thinking, fuck the greater good? Why do I have to do all this shit?
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing any fruits of my labor.
But see, I think to them, when they were in the thick of that, I think to them, they were seeing it. I think to them, the fruit of their labor was having a community.
That's not enough for me.
Maybe being judged by him, but not being judged by their peers and their brothers and sisters that they called each other.
Right.
That feeling of belonging and always having a place and always having people. I think to them, that was what they needed. And so because they felt like he was making that happen, they believed in it. So they did what he wanted. Like I said, he starts telling people they need plastic surgery. Later on, they kind of talk about how he was the one obsessed with wanting plastic surgery for himself, but he was making other people get it first to make sure it was safe, to make sure to see how it would turn out.
Oh, wow.
And then he started getting plastic surgery. His face started changing a little bit.
Ew, what a jerk.
But it's kind of funny that all of this body image stuff and talk and demands comes from him because he is the same person who's telling them all along from the beginning not to be caught up in their bodies. It's just a carcass.
Right.
It's your shell, you know, it's whatever. So the fact that he says one thing and then says and does another, he's a hypocrite, obviously, but they still are following with what he says.
And he took people in the beginning as love, acceptance, whoever you are.
Yeah.
So now to say, like, you have to get surgery, that just sucks.
But that's the thing, like we talked about, right? Like in the beginning, they seem like these wonderful, genuine people who want to be there for you and help you. And then as they suck you in, their true colors start to come out.
Right.
And when they know they've got you and they know they've got you hooked and that you're not going to leave, they can get you to do whatever they want.
Yeah, it's just like a toxic relationship.
Yeah. And then also with him like being like, don't get caught up in your body and blah, blah, blah. This is the same man who wore makeup. He wore eyeliner. Mm. He had false lashes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A lot of hypocritical ways of being. But people still
went for it. Did anybody see that kind of hypocritical stuff and say, wait a minute?
At some point when they catch on, they do. But in the middle of in those beginning years, they didn't. And as when you look at the timeline of how things worked out, it took people a long time to call you out, to call him out on his bullshit. It took a long time. Like these people were so involved. They were so indebted to him.
Right. So sad.
Yeah.
Sorry, really quick. Will, the one that made this documentary, he was the only one that has spoken up?
Mm-mm. In the documentary, several of them speak.
Ex-members.
Mm-hmm. Ex, yeah.
Okay.
Including
okay.
Will. Will's just the one who he directed it. So I should have, and I'm sorry, I didn't say this in the beginning, but when Will joined the group and became a member, he eventually became, because he's always wanted to be like a movie director. Like, I think that's what he went to school for and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. He eventually became, and I forgot what term he used, but he became like basically like their cameraman. So not only was he a slave to
he was documenting.
The master himself, he was documenting everything. So it's nice in this documentary because there's no reenactments. It's all real legit shit.
And you can imagine that was perfect for the master to want somebody to have a camera on him at all times.
Oh my God, yes.
He must have loved it.
Yeah, he did. So now we've kind of moved on to 2001 and people at this point are being told that if they left the group, they would die within 1 year.
What?
Yeah.
Who was telling them that? The master.
And his reasoning was they would, and this is in quotes, they would be out from within the wings of his grace.
Oh, jeez.
And at first when they show this in the documentary, I wasn't quite sure what this specific gentleman meant by this because they hadn't talked about any sexual problems yet. Mm-hmm. But he states that some of the men were told that they would get AIDS and die if they weren't with him.
Oh, wow.
Again, hadn't talked about sexual encounters yet. So I was kind of like, did he mean that being with them, like if they leave him altogether, they'll get AIDS and die?
Right.
Well, no. It comes back into play later on. So they jump forward to 2005. They are still living in Austin, Texas. And now he has taken a really bizarre turn.
Oh, jeez.
The master. He has started having Will make movies. And they're these just strange movies, like where the disciples play people who are like got like almost like the Mad Max, like gas masks on. And he comes to save them and they're looking up at him. And he's doing these plays where he's dressed as a woman, which there's nothing wrong with that. Do whatever the fuck makes you happy. Mm-hmm. Dress how you want. Be who you are. I don't care. But when your master is taking a strange turn and you've been following this person and their rules and their beliefs and all of a sudden they're just, they said they started feeling like they were in a circus.
Oh, so they were even at this point noticing.
Yes. And if you watch the documentary, Holy Hell, you will see what they're talking about because they show clips of him doing these performances in these women's clothes and like, they're odd. It's not like he's putting on a variety show where it's funny and he's dressed up like Dolly Parton. You know what I mean? Like, it's odd. It's a lot of weird movements and it's just, it's very strange. Hmm.
Did he do drugs? The master?
They never say.
So, I mean, if they don't say, then he was most likely sober for all this. Okay.
Possibly. Okay. He doesn't, when you look at him in this documentary, I know you saw it, but you may not remember. Something just doesn't look like it's there.
Yeah.
Right? Like he looks like
he has in weird eyes.
He looks like he's in a different world. Like he's not even on the same planet we are. So he could be on drugs. I really don't know. He is a hypocrite. So who knows, you know, because they're told not to drink and do drugs. But so here's where we start to get into it. In 2006.
Oh, here we go.
So just within a year of all that other weird stuff starting to happen, an email is sent out by one of the disciples, one of the members who's been a longtime member. He sends it out to every single disciple in the group. He lets them know that he is leaving the group.
Oh.
And he laid out tons of damning accusations.
Whistleblower.
Against the master, including that for years, the master had been forcing the young male disciples into unwanted sexual relationships with him.
Oh, shit.
So that is when I put two and two together that when the prior disciple said, or ex-member said, when he told us that if we weren't with him, we would get AIDS and die. That's when I was like, that's what he meant by that.
Right. So he was using the AIDS scare against
Say he was using, because that's when that epidemic was big, and he was using that against them. Ugh. And he was doing this to heterosexual males.
Right.
Not just the gay ones.
But he had gotten into their brains so much.
Oh, for sure.
Wow.
So then, you know, they're like, this can't be true. This is not true. And then another member came forward saying it was true and that it started during the therapy sessions. Okay. Because their therapy sessions are one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. And so this is how he started to manipulate them into the sex part with the males. He would use the information that these gentlemen would divulge to him and start putting ideas in their head. Oh, so like some of them who would say like, you know, I haven't had sex yet or, you know, I don't know, or, you know, I don't know how to do this or whatever the cause may be. He would gather all this information and he would take it and run with it. And then he started putting ideas into their head and he would say things like in regards to having sex with other men, like, you know, tell me, let's role play this. Like, let's figure this out. Like, tell me your fantasy. And the guy would be like, you mean with a woman? And he's like, no, with a man. And he's like, okay. Like some of them were utterly confused because they were straight.
Right. Yeah.
When he would start to present his ideas and wantings to them, he presented it in a sort of a spiritual way.
Oh, geez.
Making them think this is spiritual. I'm supposed to be doing this. So it would start out with things like him finding out what their fantasies were or questions they had or whatever. Then he would start to use the body as a spiritual thing. So he would say, you know, if you can't be naked in front of your master, how can you be naked in front of everybody else? How can you be naked if you can't be naked for yourself in front of, you know? So he would start to do that. Then he would use that excuse of it's just a shell. It's just, you know, it's just your body. It means nothing. And it's free and it's open and blah, blah, blah. And then he would put himself in front of them in these sessions, and he would say things like, do what you want, practice what you need to. So then he was sort of using his own body and tricking them into doing sexual things.
And then it turned on
to full-blown, as they put it, and excuse my language, fucking.
Right.
They were like, we were fucking on certain days of the week. My nights were Mondays and Saturdays, and so-and-so would do this. And a lot of them weren't gay, as I said.
Right.
They didn't want this. So the more that this got talked about, more and more men, including Will, came forward and said that he was basically forcing sex on them. Because these men believed in him so much. Mm-hmm. And believed that it was this spiritual thing that they were supposed to be doing, even though they didn't want to do it. And they at one point would tell him, like, I don't want to be having sex with you.
Right. Oh, wow.
I'm not really a gay man, or I, you know, whatever.
They flat out told him, and he didn't care.
Yeah. And the one guy who says about, like, the whole AIDS thing, he says, I, at this point, hated this man.
Oh, wow.
I hated him with everything that I had. But I couldn't leave. They just,
right.
Something kept them in.
Even if you start thinking, this is wrong, he's either has a hold of you on saying that you're going to die, or mm-hmm. you think, I'm going to leave and I'm going to lose all my brothers and sisters. I'm going to lose
everything.
Everybody that thinks that yes. I'm, that accepts me, that loves me. It's like, mm-hmm. God, it's such a mind fucker.
Well, and here's the other part of that. Think about all these people who detached from their families mm-hmm. and would have to now turn around and go back to them and be like, will you still accept me right. and love me?
And you don't know how they're going to react. Even if they right. are like, absolutely, come back. You don't know. It's a mm-hmm. it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, these people were traumatized and abused mentally and physically and spiritually, when you right. think about it. I mean, everything they thought they believed in, they thought they were believing in this God that was their savior and was going to keep them alive and healthy. And he was just traumatizing mm-hmm. them.
And it's sad because they were traumatized. They brought him in, taught him, this is how we don't traumatize you, and then end up traumatizing them.
Yeah.
And abusing yeah. them different than they were before, but it's almost the same thing. So they're back in the cycle of like just getting hurt and sticking around for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's awful.
He is at this point forcing disciples to pretend that they have life-threatening fatal diseases such as cancer, mm. and they are forced to tell their family and their brothers and sisters so that he can pretend to be this great healer.
Oh, geez.
He's going to heal them from their diseases. And because everyone's saying, I have cancer, I have this, they're going to believe that they're healed.
Right. And more people are going to join and be like, this guy's a yeah. healer. Good thing GoFundMe yeah. wasn't around back then.
Right. Oh, God. So between that and the sex part, the rape, I should call it, members started leaving. So we're in 2007, I think, at this point.
That's good. So people actually started yeah. cutting out.
Yeah. So members started leaving. Some stayed till the very end and are still part of it.
Wow.
Some that left said it was the best thing for them. They got out. Some that left are having a hard time.
They're feeling
like they're lost. They miss their family. Mm-hmm. And that the cult family, you know, things like that. So, as soon as the truth started coming out, people started leaving.
That's got to be the worst thing is that you're so brave to leave and then you feel like you don't belong somewhere and you're lost. That's got to be the yeah. worst feeling.
And at this point, Will's sisters didn't know that it had happened to him yet. They didn't know about Will yet.
And so they're all still in it at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, Will has his own secret. He knows, mm-hmm. but he hasn't. The sisters don't know yet. One of the sisters had left. The one sister, I think her name was Nancy, the one who so badly wanted to be part of the knowing and didn't get picked. Mm-hmm. She stayed and she was forever faithful to him.
Wow.
Then when she found out about Will, she finally left. So, but back at this point, when some are leaving, he's pulling, the master is pulling some of these disciples aside and saying, we can't have this happening. They know too much. Basically, do you know anyone that can take them out?
Or like kill them?
Or at the very least, have their lives messed with by people like the IRS. Like, he is just grasping at straws at this point. Members,
mafioso.
Right? Members that left started threatening to press charges against him if he didn't stop teaching altogether. Mm. He did not stop. He kept teaching. Mm. And finally, after 22 years, Will finally left without saying goodbye.
22 years.
And that is when Andreas, the master, moved his group that remained to Hawaii. Mm. So
did they say specifically why he moved to Hawaii?
Because he felt like he needed to create a new group. He didn't say why Hawaii specifically. My guess would be because he's always wanting to be in a Speedo and it's nothing but beaches. Would be my guess. Now we're in 2012. They've moved to Lanakai, which is in Oahu. Lanakai mm-hmm. Beach is in Oahu. He's created a new group. He now goes by the name of Raji or Reiji, which means God King. He starts a new group, but he still has some existing members. And as of to date, the Buddha Field is still a cult in Hawaii.
Wow.
You'll see in the documentary that towards the end that Will and some of them go to Hawaii. Will confronts him. His sisters had finally left when they found out what happened to him. Will and some of them, like I said, go to Hawaii. He confronts that they kind of spy on him to see where he's at. They go to the beach one day and the master is there with some of his disciples. A couple of the members recognize Will when he walks up and they embrace him and hug him. And he and the master just sort of stare at each other. And Will says, like, are you behaving? And he's like, no, I never behave. And he's still very creepy and still pulling his same shit. And like I said, to this day, they are still a functioning cult in Hawaii.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I really, again, highly suggest watching the documentary, free on Amazon Prime. It's called Holy Hell. You'll get a lot more information than what I'm giving you. And you can see Jaime, Michelle, Andreas, Ray J walk around in his Speedo all the time and put makeup on.
I definitely want to watch that again. And I need an update. Like somebody needs to do a follow-up.
I've been trying to search to see if he is still the master, and I can't get any information on that. Mm-hmm. I know that some of the longtime members that did stay, it said have gone on to become a teacher. I don't know if they mean a teacher in that group or if they've, not sure. But the other thing about the documentary at the very end is it does tell you where like the main group of people who do come forward on the documentary, they show you where they're at now and their lives. And it's just emotional to know what these people lived through and went through for so long. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it took them so long to figure out that they were just being manipulated and bullshitted and that all the trauma that it has caused these people in so many ways.
You've just like re-energized me to watch it again.
You know, I was thinking about this, about like in terms of how long it took them, some of them 20 plus years to realize what was being done to them. And I think about it in the terms of like, when you think that someone is in love with you because they're telling you that they are, right? Just because they say it doesn't make it true.
Right.
And think about how that feels like a lifetime, right? And it's not for most of us.
For us, it's like half of our life.
Right. But it's typically months, maybe a year where you realize that person doesn't really love you. And then you look at these people, right? And it's the same sort of thing. They think that this person is essentially in love with them and is the best thing for them. And they've done it for 20 plus years.
Right. And not only in love, going to protect them.
Yes.
Going to save them.
Is the spiritual awakening for them.
Yeah. Like it's more than just love.
Right. My point is like, think about when something like that happens to us and we think it feels like forever and it's realistically months, maybe a year or whatever, a couple years. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what 22 years of that must do to your brain.
Oh yeah. That was all a lie. It's almost like a high school relationship.
Right.
Where you thought that those 2 weeks were the best thing ever. Yeah. And then they went on and started dating somebody else.
Because some of these people you'll see in the documentary are still dealing with the emotional side that it was fake, that they were being manipulated. Like some of them, I mean, they've all moved on with their lives, but some of them are still deeply emotional and crying during this. And I get it. And I mean, I don't get it because I haven't been in a cult, but I get the trauma aspect of it.
Right.
I just feel for them because they started out already feeling lost and lonely and unloved and insecure and needing so badly to believe in something, anything. Yeah. Like, I get that. I
feel have some acceptance.
Yes, yeah. I get that. Being able to be themselves, like, I fully can feel compassion towards them with that because I can relate to that.
Right.
I just, I don't know how they're, obviously I'm hoping that they went through therapy and things like that, because that's a lot of trauma to uncover.
Right. But even reliving it, like in that documentary, talking about it, reliving it, you can't hide those emotions. I mean, no. Those don't go away, and they have to stick with you the whole time. Even if you go through therapy, you meet someone, you're going to be like, is this person like Michelle, master mm-hmm. teacher Andreas right. Jaime? Do I have to worry that this person's going to manipulate my brain?
Yeah.
You have to be skeptical of everything.
I'm sure it caused major trust issues for these people.
Ugh. Yeah, but you know, PTSD in the max.
For the ones that chose to do the documentary, this was their way of getting to say to him, fuck you.
Fuck you.
My life became great without you. I'm still right. alive.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine for the men that were sexually abused, that took even more therapy.
Oh, yeah. It's somebody taking something from you that you did not offer or give. And
right.
it's a violation of your body and yourself. And that just fucking sucks.
Memento mori, an object serving as a warning or reminder of death. Death is inevitable, but how it happens can be tragically unfair. It can be dark, cruel, hateful, or just plain bizarre. I'm Megan, and I'll be your guide through these stories of chaos and devastation. Come listen as we dive into all types of true crime cases and learn about the evil that lurks among us, as well as the victims that deserved none of it. You can go to MementoMoriPod.com for more information. Monsters are real, and they look like people.
The one guy, and I should have written his name down, and I didn't, and I want to say his name was Scott. He's the one who talked about how the master told him that if you're with anyone but me, you'll get AIDS.
Yeah.
He's a straight man, and he is the same man who, when he was in the group, started getting close to one of the females there, and the master could tell they had a mutual fascination with each other, and mm-hmm. there was kind of sparks there or whatever. He went to both of them separately and said, you can't sleep with so-and-so, and then to the other one, you can't sleep with so-and-so and get into a relationship. And he said
right.
he realized after he had had sex with him, that is why he was telling them that, was because he didn't want it to interfere with him being able to have sex with him.
Right.
And he says that when, I think her name was Sophia, when she caught on, when she realized, he said, she saved me, because
really?
We started spending time together, and the master caught on to that and didn't like it.
They realized together, because of them being together,
that they needed each other.
Right.
And so
to
they
get out?
I don't know. Not to help him get out, but just to help him be able to stay away from the master in that
and
sexual
realize,
way.
Yeah. Get a yes. little clarity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. He says, she saved me. If it wasn't for her, I don't know where I would be, because, and he lives in San Francisco now.
Is he with her?
He's not with her, but he is in a relationship with a woman, and he lives in San Francisco.
Oh, how funny.
San Francisco. Sorry, my tongue made that come out.
That's what sucks, is there's this one guy that's the quote-unquote leader of this cult that is fucking wacko-do. And then everybody else has this good heart. They're meeting good people. They're connecting with other good people. They're calling their brothers and sisters. They want to connect and make lives with them and have this new life where they feel accepted and happy. And all those people are on the same page. And then there's this fucking weirdo in a Speedo coming down like, oh, wait.
With eyeliner on.
With eyeliner and a facelift and probably some Botox or something. Wait. You guys can't get together. You have to be with me. I'm the all-knowing, blah, blah, blah. It's like, what? Not a cock blocker, but what? It's like he's just fucking up such a good thing, where if all these people just got together, maybe they would be just fine. Everything mm-hmm. would be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this guy is still alive. He's still doing this. He's still being the quote unquote leader. And he's,
I don't know if he is still the leader, but that cult is still happening in Hawaii to this day. I couldn't find, and they don't say at the end if he's still the leader, but it is still, you know, a thing. I just couldn't find if he is still part of it. And I tried searching his name, It does talk about him being in the Buddha field. It just doesn't say if he is currently the master. So I'm not sure. So
God forbid he give up his title.
Sorry. The one other thing I forgot to tell you, not only was he an actor, but the members also found out, and it made a lot of sense, that he was also in gay pornos.
Oh, gee, you don't say.
And they show clips of the gay pornos he's in. And I was like, oh, my God. I mean, they censor body parts, but you can see what they're doing. And I was like, oh, this is awful. Like, yeah, so a lot of it made sense.
That honestly doesn't surprise me at all.
No.
When was this documentary? What year was it?
The documentary was filmed in 2016, I want to say.
Okay.
And again, the only place I found that you can still watch it is Amazon Prime. Holy hell.
Holy hell.
I highly recommend it. So yeah, that is the disturbing story.
Very disturbing.
Of the cult, the Buddha field.
Hoo-wee. I mean, if we want to get into cults.
I think we should.
Now, I have to say, as much as I love me a cult, they do have the same format for quite a lot. This so reminded me of Warren Jeffs, Latter-day Saints, Mormons.
Scientology.
It so reminded me of Scientology.
It's almost like there's a handbook on cults.
Right.
On how to run one.
What was that one where it was the Wild, Wild Country? I think that's on Netflix. Ooh. And it's about the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh.
Easy for you to say. Sounds like a broccoli dish.
It's about the Bhagwan that was next to the a city in Oregon, and they ended up poisoning the water because nobody would vote for them. That's another great
documentary.
And
what is it called? The Wild?
Wild. Speaking of wild, Wild, Wild Country.
And what was it on?
I think it's on Netflix still.
Sometimes I think, though, with the cults, and you were saying, like, how do they know, like, how to do this? I think, to be honest, I think these people, well, obviously they're sick in the head. There's something wrong with them. But
very, yes.
I think the reason they follow sort of the same format is because they're essentially taking all the things that you're told as you're growing up are bad for you, would make you no matter what religion you are, it's going to make you a sinner. You're going to go to hell. It's going to kill you. So think about things like drugs and alcohol, right? Having sex, you know, all these kinds of things we're sort of told growing up.
The sinner stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's sort of their handbook on a cult. It's like I'm going to take all these things that I know people are going to think they're not supposed to do, even though we do it anyways. And I'm going to get in their head. Mm-hmm. I'm going to find out what makes them tick. I'm going to find out the things that trigger them. I'm going to find out their weaknesses. And I'm going to use these sinful things. And I am using air quotes, people, mm-hmm. sinful things, because I don't think they're sinful things, but I am going to use these sinful things, and I'm going to manipulate them into essentially providing for me.
Right.
Because that's what they're getting in the end. They are getting someone who's paying for their food, their home, keeps a roof over their head. Mm-hmm. They are constantly with someone, so they're not lonely. They're constantly having admirations, right? Like people make them feel like a god, and they have all the power.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wouldn't be that difficult to start a cult.
True. If you had that mentality. Yes. You and I would never be able to start a cult because we could never do any of those things. It takes a certain type of person, as we've seen through all of these cult documentaries, where you have to really think that you are the shit. And you have
to believe that you are God all fucking mighty, that you are the highest power.
And you have that master manipulating mind, which almost is impressive if you used it
in a proper way.
Yeah. In like would you be able to do that to change leaders in other countries' minds on not attacking America or something? Like, there's got to be a better use of this power.
Right. Or to talk down someone who's holding someone hostage, mm-hmm, or someone mm-hmm. who's getting ready to jump off the ledge. Use it for good.
Terrorist negotiation, something. Yeah. Yes. Why are you using it to turn people against their families?
To get a 2-year-old into bed.
Oh, God. Yeah.
These are the things that they should be using it for, not to take down the weak.
Right.
But that's what they prey on. The weak.
People that need acceptance and just want some love. And
you know, though, it's strange. Because as much as I've felt in my life at times that I felt like I didn't belong and I I felt like I couldn't be myself and I felt unloved. I never sought out a group. That never came to my mind. Like, oh, let me find someone. And on the flip side of that, I also never had someone come to me and said, you know, like, oh, I can show you the way. I can this. I didn't have that. I just had loving family and friends.
Right. And I think we're lucky in that way.
Yes. Because so many people don't.
I know there's some vulnerable times that I could have totally succumbed to a call. Did Nick ever tell you about his experience with Scientology?
When they tried to suck him in? He was like 18, I think. Yeah.
So for the audience, let's just recap quickly. Nick was probably 18.
I'd say 18, 19, yeah.
He was confident, but, you know, there's always a little vulnerability there. Walking around in San Francisco, some guy was like, hey, let me take a personality test. And he went in, held those cans that the Scientologists have, and they kept him in there for like 4 hours and started asking extremely personal questions, very forceful and, I don't want to say violent, but
sort of intimidating.
Very intimidating. And he got up to leave the room and they stood in front of the door like, no, you have to stay here. We have to get through. We have to keep going. And he was there for 4 hours and he was like, I'm fucking leaving. Yeah. Get the hell out of my way. I'm going to punch you. And left. But he said to me that when he was there, he could feel himself kind of turning like,
sure,
wow, this is really interesting. This is really helpful. This might be the way. Like there's that point where people can fall off the ledge and say, this is where I'm going to find what I'm looking for. And if you don't know that point of no return,
no,
you're fucked. You're 22 years into a cult.
Well, in our defense as well, when you think about Nick going through that, when you think about how our childhood was, how our adolescent years was, how our early adult years was, it doesn't surprise
me. That's what I meant. He had that vulnerability where they could prey on and they could tweak it to where they would push him just enough to where it would be, hey, join Scientology.
Yeah.
Everything will be fine. Yeah. We accept you here.
I was looking up what the actual definition of a cult is.
A cult is a system of religious veneration and devotion directed toward a particular figure or object. Also, a relatively small group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others as strange or sinister.
This one is the one that gets me. A misplaced or excessive admiration for a particular person or thing. A cult of personality.
Why is that last?
That should be first. Because that is what sums up all of it for me. For all the cults, that's what they have in common.
Right. And cult is a, I mean, now, maybe not when Webster put this in their dictionary, but cult is a, I just read, it says the cult of St. Olaf. Are you talking about Golden Girls?
Or Olaf from Frozen?
Oh.
I always knew that movie sucked those little fuckers in.
Yeah, Frozen. Cult. But cult being kind of a derogatory word, I would think that that would be, number one, a misplaced or excessive admiration for a particular person or thing. That sums it up perfectly.
I'm going to start a wine cult.
Ooh. Let's start a business called Wine Cult. And we'll just find like our favorite wines and sell them for cheaper.
Yeah. And you guys can do whatever the fuck you want. There's no rules. There's no regulation.
You can watch TV.
We prefer you to sin.
You can drink Coke.
Go be sinners.
I don't care.
That's going to be on our bottle. Be a sinner. We don't care.
Be a sinner. We don't give a shit. I don't give a fuck.
Guess what? You're not going to live forever no matter what you do. You're going to die. Welcome to the jungle, baby.
Y'all going to die. I like it. Stay tuned for a new website, Cult Wine.
Or maybe a shirt. Maybe we'll start with shirts.
Yeah, maybe we start with shirts. That's cheaper.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, one of our other side hustles, please visit
MimiApparel.com.
That's M-E-M-I apparel.com.
Melissa and Michelle
will customize
I really enjoyed you telling this story tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. I apologize again if I was all over the place, but
no.
There's just so many things that
yes.
I just wanted to talk about the key things.
I think that's the problem with one documentary. I've noticed this is he was trying to get everything in this one documentary on Holy Hill.
Yeah.
What we need is a follow-up documentary of, I'm sure more people have come out, more yeah. information has come out.
Sure.
And that's what's happening with the Warren Jeffs Latter-day Saints Mormon group. There is like three documentaries now, very much the same cadence of events, but still extremely interesting.
That was the Latter-day Saints. Those were the Saturday commercials that used to come on, right?
Like, right. Well, this
I
one
hit
is,
a ball through your what window. Did they call it?
Who broke
they
my
used
window?
To sing.
Who broke Telling my truth window? Isn't gonna be easy.
And Carlton was in one of those commercials.
I have to say, I loved the Latter-day Saints commercials.
I didn't. I thought those little fuckers were a bunch of pussies going forward, telling on themselves. Assholes.
I was like, you know what? They're good. They're copping up to their. I'm not gonna cop up to.
I didn't want to be friends with those snitches. I didn't realize that was a cult.
Well, okay. So let me preface. The Latter-day Saints in general is not the fundamentalist that are under Warren Jeffs. I want to say Warren Jeffs cult because not all fundamentalist Latter-day Saints Mormons are like this. It's just this specific group that is so in line with what you were talking about. Like we said, it's almost like it's a playbook. It's so weird.
Yeah, it is.
So there's like three documentaries that I've seen. Preaching Evil on Peacock.
I got to write these down. Preaching Evil.
Discovery Plus has a Warren Jeffs documentary. And it's so easy to be on the outside and be like, this is fucking nuts. You guys are fucking crazy. How do you know? It's easy to say that, but a lot of these people are born into it. Like in the FLDS, they are raised this way, so they don't know any other way.
Do you ever wonder if any of these people who join a cult are not the wounded or the broken or whatever? But let's say they're just like maybe socially awkward people, right? And it's hard for them to make friends.
Right.
And they're like, I'm tired of sitting around on a Friday night all by myself. Mm-hmm. And they join a cult. And never once believe the bullshit that's being told to them, but they do it because they just need a group of people. Like they don't want to be lonely, but in their mind, they know that what's being fed to them is a bunch of shit.
Like, do I think that that happens?
Yeah.
If that happens, I would love for them to record and secretly be the spy on what is going on in real life in there. I think there could be a good outcome of that, but I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt if you're right. I wouldn't doubt if people seek that out.
But here's the thing to that. I don't think that they would be willing to secretly record or sort of tell on this group because they want so badly to have friends and be around people.
Almost a foot in both the water and the sand. Yeah. They kind of like it, but they also kind of see through the bullshit.
Yeah.
I would love to know if there are people out there doing that and what their experience is and how they think and what they perceive this information as and how they're feeling. I would love to know. Somebody's going to make a documentary on something like that. That would be great.
Yeah. Like, do they go home at the other night and go, whoa, that Joe's a fucking whack job.
Fucking whack.
But I got friends to hang out with.
But I'm going to go there next week.
I didn't eat dinner alone.
See you tomorrow.
We have a vacation planned. You know,
so like, maybe there are people that are like, hey, this isn't too bad, but maybe they aren't getting as mind screwed and traumatized as other people are to maybe they still have that clarity.
Yeah. But I also just want to say if there is anyone out there like that, baby, there are other ways to make friends.
Right.
You don't have to hang out in a cult.
Especially now. I think cults are really big. From Satanic Panic in the 80s, 90s, 2000s. And I think now with all of this media, I think finally people are realizing stuff's a cult, stuff's a multi-level marketing, stuff is, they're going to get into your head and we want to tell you about it. There's more documentaries about it. And I think now it's hopefully fading out.
I don't know, because I'm starting to feel like skincare's a cult. I'm obsessed.
Maybe
with skincare products. Makeup is a cult.
Hey, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm just saying, a cult doesn't necessarily to me feel like it has to be a cult. Religious thing.
Everything can be a cult.
That's what I'm saying. Right.
So we just have to keep diligent on knowing, being aware and knowing what is going on and how we feel. And keep talking to your family, goddammit.
When someone says you can't talk to your family, you know you're in a cult.
Right. I think that's a good sign. That's a good first sign.
Stay out of the woods. If you find yourself in a cult, call your mom or dad.
Yes, please.
Call me. Fuck, I'll help you get out.
Call us. If your mom or dad is like, oh, that sounds nice, call us. We'll get you out of there. We will kidnap you in the middle of the night.
Yes, we will.
I got a truck.
We will contact the
CAN.
Yes. Cult Awareness Network for you.
Yes.
We'll get you out.
I like it. Have you watched anything on the Nexium cult?
No.
Oh. Okay. So another one that you have to watch, write this down.
Nexium?
Is Allison Mack, who was, she was on Smallville.
Oh, I've heard about that. I just didn't know Nexium was what it was called.
Right. So she, well, and it's spelled weird. It's NXIVM.
Yeah.
And it's pronounced Nexium.
But I did know about that. I just didn't know that was the name. Okay.
I believe it's on Netflix as well. The leader is Keith Raniere, and he's the founder, and exact same format.
Yeah.
Gets people in that are vulnerable, talks to them like Tony Robbins. Mm-hmm. Gets them all pumped up and like, this is your community. And then sexual assaults and blah, blah, blah ensue. Mm-hmm. So very interesting.
Okay.
She's on trial because she had a hand in bringing people in and branding people.
Ooh.
Like literally using a cauterizing pen. Yeah. Or what is it called?
Physically branding people. With the
physically, yes.
Like they brand horses and cows and
right.
Oh,
like a hot pen.
Yeah, they
and they would write her initials or his initials in their like pubic region.
Oh.
Yeah, that's another one that just is mind blowing.
Well, I think that
oh my God, has this turned into a cult podcast? Because I am ready to do all kinds of cult information.
I mean, I would love for you to do a cult next on one that I haven't heard about.
Mm.
So I think that's what we should do next week. Everyone stay tuned. Michelle's going to tell us a bedtime story.
I've almost drank this whole bottle of wine, FYI.
Oh, Michelle. She's part of that cult, you know. I would also like to get our buddy Dave Ashton as a guest on here.
Oh, yeah.
He has his own podcast called Some Kind of Parent Podcast, mm-hmm. for those of you that would like to check that out. I have a feeling he could probably tell us some spooky, creepy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to have him on there as well.
I just wish I was better at like interviewing people.
Here's the thing. I think that because we're clearly not professional people, nobody expects that.
I hope so.
I think that we just do whatever we want.
Right.
And ask whatever you want and just let it go. And like, even if we don't ask a lot of questions, just let them talk about whatever. Like,
right.
So stay tuned next week.
As we discuss a scary movie with a special guest. Or stay tuned next week. Where we fucking don't do shit and we wait another week.
Listen, let's be real, people. Okay, I am going to break it down for you. We are not professional.
Missy has dental work.
We usually drink while we're doing this.
Heavily.
Some of us more than others.
I'm almost done with my bottle.
We never fully have an idea of what we're discussing until sometimes the day of. And quite often, when we have scheduled to record, one of us will text the other and say, can you do tomorrow or 2 weeks later from now? Because tonight doesn't work for me. So when we say stay tuned because next week we're going to talk about such and such, don't be surprised if we end up talking about growing pains or different strokes, because that's what happens. It is life.
That's life, people.
And we fly by the seat of our pants.
That's right.
If you don't like it, deuces.
Hey, until we're sponsored, until we're getting paid for this shit, $20 a year isn't cutting it, man.
Yeah. All right, my tongue hurts. I need some more wine.
This is just for fun. If anybody's new here, this is my bester, my sister-in-law, my best
She's
friend.
She's my person.
In California.
She's my person.
With me in Nevada, where we want to talk about scary, creepy, fucking weird shit.
With each other. And because we don't live near each other anymore, right. We decided, hey.
Right. Even though we text every day.
Like every 5 minutes.
Every 5 minutes. We'll get off this call and we'll text each other. But you know what? We want to record this because we want to share it with you. We are doing a service. You know what? I think we should start a cult.
We are servicing the community.
Whoa.
Not in that way. Not in that way. Settle down, all you Karens out there. Settle down. It's not what I meant. We are gracing you with our comedic presence.
Both of our moms are called Karen.
Oh my God, they are.
Both of our moms are named Karen, so we can't necessarily say that in
But you know what? If you were in London and said are called, you wouldn't have been wrong because every book I have seems to take place in England and they all have these accents. And when they talk about people, they don't say her name is or she is. They say is called.
Called.
Karen or Michelle.
Yeah.
It's proper English though, I believe.
Yeah.
Right? Don't they speak proper English?
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
I don't know what I'm saying half the time.
I'm fucking United States. The fucking U.S.
That was very Melissa McCarthy right there. If anyone
fucking
can see
US.
It, I wish you could.
Like the ranch episode. Oh my God, Nick's been waiting for me at 7:20. I thought you were going to McDonald's. Motherfucker. Okay, I'm ready. We're wrapping up.
Yeah, my tongue hurts.
I bet it does.
That was quite.
What am I editing in here?
Leave it all in. I don't fucking care. Leave it all in. Let them.
How much have you had to drink?
One glass.
What?
Because these aren't cordless. Like, I was doing all the talking. I couldn't get up and walk away to get more.
This is true. I know. Life's a bitch.
I got to get on your level. I'm about to pour myself some more when I walk out my room, though.
Well,
I should put a refrigerator in this recording studio.
So, ooh.
/ office / drum kit station I got going on
/
here. A refrigerator in here or an ice chest. Fuck it. I'll get the styrofoam igloo going. Ain't nobody fancy up in here.
I like it.
It works. And as always, don't forget to keep the lights on. Sleep soundly. What do we say?
Sleep tight.
Don't let the bed bugs bite.
Okay. Sleep soundly. Okay, honestly, we've been doing this for over a year. Almost weekly. Almost. And we still don't fucking remember what our sign-off is.
Because we're not professional.
This is very true.
You know what? Because this one wasn't scary in your traditional sense, I don't want to end it with keep the lights on and tuck yourself in.
Okay.
Tuck yourself in. All right, everybody. Don't join a cult.
Listen, people. Go pour yourself a mega pint. Have some delicious cheese and call it a night because we are done. I saw it fit. I pulled myself
from the guy that has convinced you that his fingers are knives.
What a fucking dumb broad. I'm sorry.
Team Johnny.
I think we could do a whole podcast on her.
Oh,
Jesus
shit.
Christ. She would raise my blood pressure.
Yeah. All right. Quickly. Sleep tight.
Okay. Yeah. Whatever. Fucking just do what you need to do. Peace out. Just don't join a cult.
Don't
okay?
join a cult. And make sure you keep the lights on.
Night, night. Okay, go eat your food because you look like you need it.
I can't believe I drank this whole bottle.
I can't believe it's not butter.
I can't believe it's not butter. Okay. Go to FreakyFridaysPodcast.com and subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast listening platform.
Join us next week for a new freaky tale.